Call to order the regular Borough Assembly meeting of City and Borough of Waynesville, Alaska on June 9th, 2015, at 7 p.m. Pledge of Allegiance this evening will be led by Assembly Member Becky Rooney, and the invocation will be given by Don McConaughey. Please remain standing.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let us pray. Dear Lord, keep watch over the Assembly of Wrangellville, Alaska. Give them the will to carry out the work necessary to improve this city. Give them the knowledge required to make the best decisions for the people that reside here. And Lord, give them your guidance. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Thank you. We have a certificate of service this evening for Michael Burke. The City and Borough of Waynesville, Alaska presents this certificate of service to Michael Brown for his service and dedication as a member on the Parks and Recreation Board from March 2014 to May 2015. Roll call, please.
Assemblymember Blake?
Here.
DeSanta?
Here.
Rooney?
Here.
Decker?
Here.
Powell?
Here.
Mitchell?
Here.
Mayor Jack?
Here. Item three, amendments to the agenda. I have one suggestion here, is that item 13D on the new business of approval of the Waynesville Medical Center budget, and item 13G is approval of an addendum to the Waynesville Medical Center's master service agreement with TruBridge about receivable financial services. I think it'd be appropriate to switch those around since one might reflect it on the other. The agreement may have a reflection on the budget. Yes.
I would agree with that, and maybe put them next to each other. So move D down below F and then flip them.
The other way. D down below F. Oh, I see.
Well, what I'm saying is just move them so they're next to each other.
Just make it left.
At the end
well,
of the agenda.
Well, we could just switch.
So okay. G below, D below
so
G.
So we do one and then the other one without getting off topic.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm confused.
She's saying move them down together so G would, and then D.
Okay, we would have, this would go on here.
Yeah.
And then everything would just
shift up.
Okay, I think I've got it.
That's what you meant, right, Jim?
Okay. next item is conflict of interest.
My wife has a contract with the hospital. She's a long-term care resident director, and she also works for AICS as a physician, and AICS has a contract with Wrangell Medical Center to provide ER services and in-hospital services.
What particular item are you referring to?
Probably the budget and the approval of the addendum to the Wrangell Medical Center Master Services Agreement.
I don't see that the addendum would have any bearing on that at all. The conflict, I don't, and what would, how would,
just,
how would
just you, saying that we have a financial interest in the hospital, so I just wanted to bring it forward. I don't know if there's a conflict. I'm just bringing it forward.
The thing is approving the budget going to make any difference in your financial situation? Your contract is already, her contract has already been approved.
Established.
That's correct.
Yes.
Then I don't see that the budget approving the budget or having anything to do with the budget would have any effect on that. I just don't see a conflict.
Okay.
Does anyone else see a conflict?
I don't see a conflict.
Okay.
Thank you. Just, and another item there is, I'd like to clarify that I do see our civil process. And the item of the addendum could have an effect on the civil process. I serve now, most of it goes through Ketchikan, through Northern Credit Services out of Ketchikan, and Wrangell Medical Center has done business with them in the past. And I don't know whether this would continue that or not, and whether it have any bearing on it at all, one way or the other. But I don't really think I have a conflict, but I wanted to bring that out in the open and make sure everybody clearly understood there. Item five, consent agenda.
I'd like to motion to approve items 6A and 7A, but not 13A. I would like to hold that back just to have some questions answered under the regular agenda. It's listed under unfinished business, 13A. Does that make sense?
Right. You want to...
I'll second that.
Item seven, then we'll discuss that item, right?
I think it's...
It's under communications.
Well, it's also listed under 13A on the agenda, so I figured we could discuss it there.
Okay, yeah.
Either way.
Anybody second that?
I'll second that. And just for unclear, we're just removing 13A from consent agenda to be brought up in communication.
Yeah.
Okay, I second that.
Okay. Any discussion? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Assemblymember Prasanka?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Lake?
Yes.
Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item eight, Borough Manager's Report.
I don't have anything other than my written report. I will be out of town, even on the ferry tomorrow morning, and I'll be back into the office on next Tuesday. So Carol Rushmore will be the acting manager, and she'll have access to me, so that's about it.
Any questions, comments? Borough Clerk's Report.
None.
Item 10, Mayor Assembly Reports and Appointments. Do you have any reports from any assembly member?
I have. I'd like to make a comment regarding SEPA and some information that's come to me via one assembly member and my colleague on the board, Clay Hammer. It would appear that a board member from SEPA, who is from Ketchikan, has been calling up former members of the Thomas Bay board and former employees and telling them that, well, basically saying a couple of things, and one of them is that the SEPA agreement can be nullified by SEPA and leaving the member communities basically out in the lurch if it so chooses. It's categorically not true. The only time that that could happen is if SEPA defaulted on all of its bonds. Then yes, the power authority agreement is null and void because SEPA is bankrupt. There is no more SEPA. So we would go, it would be partitioned off, but probably sold off and given to our creditors. I am really concerned about this board member contacting these people. And tomorrow we have our regular meeting. I am going to be raising this as a concern from Wrangell. One of the things that I was told when I went on this board was to be very cautious. Many members of our community were very concerned that there was ulterior motives by other communities, and that we needed to be very careful how we proceeded. I don't know why a board member from another community would be meddling into our community, but I will find out. The second thing that was raised with the assembly member was a matter of personnel, and I'm not going to address that. It is not my position on the board to do personnel. We don't discuss that as our executive director's function, and so I won't be getting into that. But again, it really bothered me that a fellow board member potentially was discussing personnel with community members. So we'll be moving forward. I would encourage anybody in the community or other board members, assembly members, who have concerns to please come see Clay Hammer or myself, and we will do our best to find the answers. But I think it's really important that we move forward with good information and not just sort of hearsay and sort of blown up allegations against the board. That's it for me.
Okay. Thank you. Yes.
I just wanted to mention, I'm not sure how many folks are aware, but the governor has started holding meetings basically about the future of the fiscal situation in the state. There was a group that included part of his transition team and others that met Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this past weekend in Fairbanks. And there's a really nice website, actually, that you can get to through the state's website and the governor's page. They have all the documents that were presented. A lot of the presentations are archived there. And, you know, what they're basically doing is looking at what's the picture forecasted for the future for the next 10 or so years, and what's our projected revenues, what's our projected income, and how do we meet the gap, because there's quite a big gap. So they're looking at all different sorts of taxes. They're looking at things like the permanent fund dividend. You know, everything's on the table. A lot of really good information, though, you know, factual information regarding sort of the size of different types of taxes and the size of different types of cuts and where the budget is the biggest and things like that. So anyway, just for people's information, the problem is not going away. So I think that's the point that the governor's trying to make, is, you know, us start having the conversation, because it's not, if we just close our eyes and put our head in the sand, it's not going to go away.
It's not going away, just move to Anchorage. Any other reports? We have one appointment this evening, appointment to fill a vacancy on the Parks and Recreation Board. We did receive one letter of interest from Dan Rudy, although Dan is a local newspaper person and reporter. There may on occasion be something that comes up, it's very rare, but that you understand that if you're appointed to this, that anything that's confidential is confidential. I mean, it might have a little conflict there, and never realize that confidentiality comes first. After saying that, I'm going to go ahead and appoint you to that position. Thank you for your interest. We have no more appointments. The next item is persons to be heard. Are there any persons to be heard? Just to clarify, this is an opportunity for any member of the public, the audience, to speak on any item that is on the agenda. When the agenda item comes up, you do not have an opportunity to speak on it unless the assembly has specific questions regarding the item. In other words, this is the time to speak if you have something to say on any item on the agenda.
Nobody signed up at this time.
Thank you. Item 12, unfinished business. Proposed ordinance number 903, an ordinance of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, placing the question of exemption from Alaska Statute AS 3950, the State of Alaska's Public Official Financial Disclosure Law, on the ballot for the October 6, 2015 regular borough election. This is the second reading.
I move to adopt ordinance number 903.
Second.
Been moved and second. Any discussion? Hearing none, call roll, please.
Councilmember Rooney?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Blake?
Yes.
Prusunka?
Yes.
Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13, new business. 13A, final plat approval for the Edgley Masson subdivision.
Yeah, so I'll motion to approve the final plat approval for the Edgley Masson subdivision.
A second.
And I just wanted
moved and seconded. Any discussion?
Sorry. I just wanted to find out from the borough manager. There was some controversy, so I assumed that all got worked out. And I know we have like a memo here from Planning and Zoning that they approved it, but I couldn't really tell from the memo that we had maps in the past, and so what I wasn't sure what they approved. And
Mr. Mayor,
go ahead.
Okay, this is basically just Mr. Edgley's property. And Ms. Masson, there's still things that are not resolved. Mr. Edgley wanted to get this resolved. His land cleaned up. There was, up on the top part, there was a driveway that goes onto the Masson's property that's there. And he was accommodating her to do that. There was, a lot line adjustment because of a building she had that was encroaching. And then on the bottom side, there was a utility easement, electric easement, and another a little land issue too that was resolved. But it's the other issues that were on the Masson property are still exist. So this was just Mr. Edgley wanting to clean up his piece of property.
Okay, thank you. That helps.
Any further discussion?
Nope.
Roll, please.
Councilmember Decker?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Blake?
Yes.
Prusunka?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
Mayor Jack?
Yes. 13B, proposed resolution number 06-15-1320. A resolution of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, authorizing the conveyance of public land, lot 2 and 4, RAL, subdivision, U.S. Survey 1119, Wrangell Town Site, by quick claim deed to Tyler Thompson and Catherine Ivey.
Move to approve resolution number 06-15-1319.
Second.
Been moved and second. Any discussion? Roll vote, please.
Assemblymember Powell?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Blake?
Yes.
Prusunka?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13C, proposed resolution number 06-15-1319. A resolution of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, authorizing the sale of city-owned lots to be sold over the counter.
Move to approve resolution number 1320. Authorizing city-owned lots to be sold over-the-counter pursuant to WMC
16.12.105. Resolution 1319. 1320 was the first one.
I'm on the wrong.
I got the same one as him.
No, that's what I've got.
That's what I got, too.
Okay, I don't know.
1319 was the previous one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a typo. Okay.
Okay, it's a typo.
Move to approve resolution number 06-15-1319.
And this is the resolution of the Assembly of the City of Rural Brandon, Alaska, authorizing the sale of city-owned lots to be sold over the counter?
Yes.
Seconded.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Call roll, please.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Blake?
Yes.
Chrisanka?
Yes.
Tony?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13D has been moved to later in the agenda. We'll go to item 13E, approval of the bid received from Advanced Truck Body and Equipment Company for the F-550 service truck with crane body procurement.
Move to approve contract award to Advanced Truck Body and Equipment Company for the supply of a Ford F-550 truck and service body in the amount of $53,549, with funding to come from approved 2016 fiscal year water and sewer budgets, and also to include a budget amendment in the amount of $1,774.50 from the sewer fund and $1,774.50 from the water fund to complete the funding needed for the purchase.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Call roll, please.
Assemblymember Blake?
Yes.
Chrisanka?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13F, proposed resolution number 06-15-1321, a resolution of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Brandon, Alaska, authorizing a plan of financing for the reconstruction of Shoemaker Bay Harbor, including the issuance of harbor revenue funds and applications for grant funding and for the sale of the revenue bonds.
I'll move to adopt resolution number 6-15-1321, authorizing a plan for financing for the Shoemaker Bay Harbor reconstruction.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Yes.
I was wondering if the borough manager might explain a little bit more about the commercial fishing infrastructure funds, that pot of money?
You want to take a shot at that? It's good practice for you.
The money now.
So, let me see here. I'm going to crack open one of our new budgets that we just printed. So there are basically two sources. Sorry, my name is Lee Burgess, 8.5 miles of Movia Highway.
Thank you, go ahead.
So the two sources of money that make up the $3.2 million approximately of commercial fisheries infrastructure, deferred revenue, and harbor replacement reserve, those are the two sources of money that make up the $3.2 million that would be used in cash as part of the city's match for this. The harbor replacement reserve funds are basically paid by 12/25ths of the stall rent revenue that we get each year. That was decided, I don't remember exactly when that was instituted, but the last time that stall rent was increased to $25 per foot, 12 of those dollars, it was decided, would be deferred into this harbor replacement reserve. The commercial fishing infrastructure fund is money set aside to improve commercial fishing infrastructure in Wrangell, and that is set aside, trying to remember the exact
the exact way to describe this. Basically, we get raw fish tax revenue from the state, and we take that amount and multiply it by two-thirds, and that is the amount of the raw fish tax that can be used to support the harbor's operating budget, and the remainder is deferred into this commercial fishing infrastructure replacement fund. So I think that I described that in the right way. If you have any clarifying questions, just let me know. So those two amounts have been kind of growing over several years, but their purpose is to provide funding to support capital improvements that will renovate our harbors and or improve the commercial fishing infrastructure. And so both of those sources of money we feel are appropriate for this purpose. So.
I think for any further questions? Thank you. Any other comments or discussion?
Just one additional thing. Part of the plan was that we will be matching the state money. The bonds and the reserves will be matching a state grant. And this allows us to apply for the grant. So we have to have this approved to show that we have the match before we can actually apply. So I think we have to have the application in by August 1st. And it's a state pot of money that they have funded for harbor replacements. And so if we wouldn't issue these bonds unless the grant is approved from the state. So, and it's anticipated at this time that the 12/25 that he was talking about, that money will be there, so there should not be any increase to harbor fees for at least this person or this reason. So that's kind of the plan, that money, instead of going into the reserve fund, will make the payment on these bonds for 20 years.
Yeah.
That harbor replacement fund, isn't it funded every year?
I think it is.
And did they put funds in it this year?
You know, I don't know if they did or not. I know it was a high priority for them.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they actually ended up. It would be amazing if they did. But
I know.
And $5 million is the maximum you can apply for under this. So so we're hopeful that. And we have the plans done, so we're a long ways along the process, which will give us points, and it is a competitive process. So so we're hopeful that, and we're hopeful that we'll get it. And also part of the design or redesign is to put in more stalls where they're short now. I think it's 48 footers and for mainly a lot of more bigger boats. So.
Any further discussion? Poll, please.
Assemblymember Prusanka?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Blake?
Yes.
Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13G, approval of an addendum to the Wrangell Medical Center's master service agreement with TrueBridge to add accounts receivable management services.
Move to approve the amendment to the Wrangell Medical Center's master service agreement with TrueBridge to add accounts receivable management service as presented.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion?
Someone want to explain it to me?
Well, and so maybe we can have the two Wrangell Medical Center folks come up. But I had a couple of things. We have two new documents in front of us.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering how they relate to what was in our packet. And anyway, and just the general description maybe we could give.
Someone, either one of you like to come forward, or maybe both of you, to explain this?
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to explain that and to answer any questions that you have about this. We're going to tag team on this so that we don't forget name and address. Marla Sanger, 223 First Street, Wrangell, Alaska. Thank you.
Doran Hammett, Chief Financial Officer, currently residing at 612 Edelin.
So we have been, we're continuing in some contract negotiations with TruBridge, not around the terms of the agreement so much as the, some of the things like jurisdiction, governing law. We wanted that to be in Alaska, not in Alabama. Those kinds of things that typically, when we work with Bob Blasco on an agreement like this, that we make sure that those kinds of conditions are favorable to Wrangell Medical Center. And so, but the specific changes that, I brought the one with me that you, the most recent one that you got. And I'm going to try to explain, as I did yesterday to our Wrangell Medical Center board, if you could look first at the one that is on the front says amendment. It says TruBridge LLC service amendment.
Which date? We have June 4th.
And the date
and June 5th.
Is June 4th.
We also have one on June 5th.
Oh, and that's a separate thing. If you look at the June 5th one, it says it's an addendum.
Okay.
So the amendment, what that is, there's a master agreement that we entered into in May of 2013, Wrangell Medical Center and TruBridge. And the purpose of that was to be able to engage TruBridge, which is a subsidiary of our computer vendor, CPSI. So they have the same computer system. They are our computer system. And one of the things that we were needing to do for high-tech, the High-Tech Act and Meaningful Use, is to have a risk assessment of our technology systems, our security, and it actually extended to many other things that were very useful and overlapped actually quite a bit with our insurance company's risk assessment. So we found it pretty valuable. So we entered into the master agreement in order to be able to get that, and we were very, very pleased with the service that we got. They were very thorough. We got a lot of value out of it. And that is included, was originally included in your packet, and that has not changed, except that the purpose of the amendment is to make alterations to it. Usually with a master agreement, you don't ever change that. You just make changes by adding amendments. That's what this is. And the changes that we wanted to make to the master agreement included, if you look at, turn over and look at page one, there's number one says safe harmless. They have some safe harmless language in there that Bob Blasco felt could be acceptable if we added some of our own language to it. They didn't like that idea and wanted to just remove it entirely, and that was fine with Mr. Blasco. So that was removed. The second section had information about liability, which was not something that we didn't like, but we wanted to add some language to the addendum, and I'll get that to that in just a minute, that would allow us, or make it so that TruBridge would have a bigger limitation on, or a bigger, I guess I would say, range within which they would be held liable. For example, if there were any violations of federal law, which is something that you run some risk for when you're dealing with things like HIPAA and things like federal law as it applies to billing practices. So originally they wanted their liability to be only to the extent of the value of the contract, and we didn't think that was enough, so we negotiated for an increase to $1 million. And you'll see that in just a minute. So, and then I'll circle back to this. So if you turn the page now to page two, at the very top where it says governing law, that is where we changed. Before the change, that had language in it about governing law being Mobile, Alabama, and different things. This is now changed to State of Alaska and Wrangell in particular. And so that those are all of the changes that we made to this one. But then after we, so there was one last change that we didn't get accomplished until yesterday, and but it was a change that I had negotiated over the weekend with Bob's guidance, and that was to add that same language about increasing the amount of liability that TruBridge would shoulder. I felt it was necessary to have that in the same language consistent about liability in the amendment and in the addendum. And currently, right now, in this document, you'll see that it's only in the addendum. So let's look at that next. So if you look at this one, it looks kind of the same, but it says service addendum instead of amendment, and it's got the date of June 5th. Now, this document is where it talks about the actual billing services part of this. Everything so far was the foundational document being the master agreement and the amendment with some of those changes that improved it for our benefit. So in this one, there's not a lot of change in here, but if you look at page 2, I want to call out that the rate that we were down at the bottom of the page where it says service rate 2.2%. I wanted to let you know that their rate frequently is quite a bit higher than that. It might be 4 or 5%. And how they determine the rate is partly in the kinds of accounts that they're going to be working on. And also, Doran was just able to negotiate down the rate from what they originally wanted to start with, which I think was it 4? From 3 down to 2.2. So that was a favorable change in our favor. And then if you turn the page, and again, those, and Doran can speak more to this because he's actually worked with us, with TruBridge on these things, but the only time they would collect any money is on actual cash that is received. So it's not cash we think we're going to receive or charges, it's actual cash that came in. Now go to page 4. And another thing that we wanted in added into this addendum was, if you look at number 3, where it says cancellation, we wanted to have a way of exiting the agreement if after the first 2 years we were feeling like we could consider bringing this work back in-house. At this point in time, the way things are changing in the billing business, and Doran has much more knowledge of this, but it is changing so fast and it's getting so complicated, I'd be kind of surprised if we would do this. But we wanted to have the option if it seemed like it was appropriate to do so. So with this clause, it just means that after the initial term is completed, then we have the opportunity to cancel it by giving 90 days written notice. And they actually push back on that a little bit because most people don't question that, but that gives us just a little bit more leverage and protection. And then if you'll turn to page 5, this is the actual document where they added the language. Did I give you the redlined version? Thank you. Okay, this is where you'll see at the very bottom of the page where it gives that amount of $1 million of exposure that TruBridge would have. And so they agreed to put it in there. But what I struggled with was that we had it in the addendum, but not in the amendment. And I was able to talk to Bob about this on Saturday because my concern was if we had a dispute or if there was some exposure, that they might say, well, no, the one that we're going to rely on is the one in the amendment. It didn't have that extra protective language in it. And Bob agreed that inconsistency could be a problem of interpretation later on. So he came up with a suggestion that we just add this piece at the bottom, this whole liability section E, to the other document also. Then they would be consistent and we would have no debate about which was the one that they could call upon. And so they agreed to that, but in the final document, what it ended up doing is putting all of that language, all the liability, in the amendment, because the amendment is what informs the addendum. Does that make sense? So because the addendum, the amendment has to comply with the amendment. I get my addendums and my amendments mixed up after saying it too many times. So now I feel that we're, the final document, which you don't have, just has moved all of that to the one location in the amendment. I still, just to be sure, ran it past Megan Costello, who works in Bob Lasko's office, and haven't heard back from her, but I'm quite sure that that is going to be the final resolution. The other thing we could do is have it in both places, but then it's kind of it's just redundant. So that explains all the changes that have occurred. Does that help with that part? Any questions about just the documents themselves? Yes.
Did Bob Velasco review our original master service agreement that we signed in 2013?
Yes, he did, and that's why some of these, that is how some of these amendments came about, because that's where the language was about the jurisdiction being in Mobile, Alabama.
How did we miss that after our innovative capital fiasco? How did that get missed by Bob?
Oh, I'm just saying,
In a follow-up contract?
Okay, I
thought... I think you misunderstood your question.
Oh, okay.
When the 2013 agreement, mm-hmm. when it was proposed, it was initially proposed, did Bob review it at that time?
Okay, originally, I don't believe he did. The original one was crafted, was negotiated by Garth Hamblin, our CFO at the time. And Garth started the same day I did, so neither one of us had been on the job for 6 months even. And so I'm well-versed now as to the kinds of things that Bob would look for, but neither one of us would have known that then. So that's how that got missed.
Well, my question is there other contracts that this hospital has that we do not have, proper language, it infuriates me, that we could have been placed in another position where we are signing off on great deals of money because we can't prosecute, or we can't have the trial in Wrangell. We have to go to Mobile, Alabama, or wherever, Syracuse, New York.
I'm sorry that it infuriates you, Steve. That's not our goal, to have contracts that put us at risk. So when we have been going through our contracts, trying to bring them up to date, and that's one of the reasons why, is because we have contracts that precede me by quite a bit that are still in force. So yeah, it's something that we're definitely looking at. It's a concern.
I think to that point, I asked Kim, why were we receiving this now to review when we didn't receive the original? And she explained that the difference is that the amount, when the original was below $25,000, and the assembly doesn't have to approve contracts below that level, but above that level we do. So that's another reason why now it's coming forward, and now Bob Blasco is looking at it and things like that. So that's one of the differences.
You
can speak to that, and then I have a couple of other questions about, this is the addendum, page mm-hmm. 4 and 5. So my question, I guess, in general is, the 2.2% that will be paid for the services,
yes.
of collecting, basically, mm-hmm. Is that paid on, and you said it's paid on all cash received, not billed, but what's actually received?
For services, it doesn't include everything, so it doesn't include like our meaningful use payment that we get, but on charges that for services, then yes.
So maybe you could just expand on the, because it lists it in section D1, A, B, and C, the types, but I don't know if I mm-hmm. follow all the language. So maybe in more plain language, if you could go through the types of cash received that we'll be paying 2.2% on.
Right.
And even what you project that to be of our total mm-hmm. receipts.
Doran Hammond again. Under the included receipts, I think is what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Any accounts receivable, any patient billed account, it has to be a patient billed account for any services, inpatient, outpatient, ER, anytime we bill a patient, they will be responsible for that billing and collections, and they get paid their 2.2% on that. It might be a little clearer for the things they don't get paid on. They would not get paid on any donations we receive, any meaningful use payments from Medicare. They would, if on a cost report we get find that we owe Medicare money back and we have to pay it back, then they have to take their 2.2% off of that number. So and by the same token, if we have a Medicare cost report that we're owed some additional money, they do get 2.2% back, because that's money that they should have received originally. So really it relates to just patient service billing. It would not include vending machines, those kinds of things, or if there's any rental revenue, or any kind of thing that's not directly related to a patient service.
So to follow up on that, what would you project roughly, for that total of the revenue that stream that comes to the hospital, how much is being is it 90% that we pay 2.2% on, or is it 50%? Or?
It would be likely well over 90%. I mean, it's the majority of our money, obviously, is patient service revenue. We estimate we collect on patient service revenue about $9 million a year, and they would be paid upon that.
So another question I had, and some of the description in the letter that you put in our packet, you mentioned that I believe TruBridge does something also similar in Petersburg, and that they were able to collect in their first year under the contract pretty good chunk of money. Can you give us a ballpark of what that was? And then it does the budget that's in front of us as our next agenda item include payment for the 2.2%?
In Petersburg, they, in October of 2013, let me back up, to June of 2013 for their fiscal year ending in 2013, after their audit, they had about $100,000 in operating cash. In October, they not only switched to TruBridge, they also changed computer software systems from Healthland to CPSI. So they made a big change at that time. By the end of their fiscal year 2014, June of 2014, from the change in October of 2013, their cash went to $2.5 million. And they dropped their accounts receivable from $6 million to about half, around $3 million. So they were very successful. And continue to be so. They actually are in a three-year contract. Their contract is not up until 2016. And they're paying a higher rate than you would be paying too. As a matter of fact, I told the representative at TruBridge that once that CFO of Petersburg found out about this contract, he'd probably want to break on the price too. So, but they've been very cooperative when I negotiated with them. There, another thing that I learned today that I asked them for that I really didn't expect to get, but they agreed to, they will allow us to pay our monthly service fee using our Alaska Airlines Visa. And so that is a significant number of miles, which allows, now the Visa we pay up to pay every month. But that's a significant number of miles, which allows some of your staff who have to go for recertifications and training. It allows us to have those mileage that we don't have to pay for. So.
Sure. Reduce traffic.
Bet you were surprised.
I was very surprised, yeah. Because they will pay a fee for accepting the Visa card, but we'll take it.
And that suggestion came from one of our Wrangell Medical Center board members.
Right.
So I was really glad, and none of us thought that they would go for it, so mm-hmm. That was a good surprise.
Never know unless you ask.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's my philosophy. Yes.
I'll let you go.
Okay. Following with Assembly Member Decker's questions, what will we realize as a savings by allowing TruBridge to take over some of these things, and is it in the budget?
This is going to cost you money. There won't be a savings. Petersburg had a little different situation. They were employing about four or five contract billers at about $65 an hour doing their contract billing. You're not doing that right now, so you won't have that savings. Mr. Prezanka asked a question at the board meeting about this too. And I think you will see some improvement in revenue because frequently what happens is accounts tend to get old and your staff are working very hard trying to keep the current stuff going, and then as accounts age and they get older and older, then it becomes more and more difficult to go back and pull those accounts back and do the research and find out what needs to be done and build. So I think you will see more accounts that are billed and billed timely and paid timely, and therefore you don't get into situations where you get timely filing and you can't get paid for, or it gets old enough to where it becomes so cloudy, you know, it's very difficult to get something together that you can go for. I think there will be some improvement, but all in all, yes, it will cost you money. So as Marla said, I think this may be maybe a a stopgap measure because your cash situation is so precarious. You had some improvement in your cash from November to December of last year, and your accounts receivable dropped some, but you've basically remained flat. Your cash and your accounts receivable has remained flat. Your cash is not going up, and your accounts receivable is not going down. If you can have the kind of success that Petersburg had, and I certainly think you can do that, if you could generate a couple of $1 million worth of cash, or even $1.5 million, by the time you get 18 months into this, then you can take a look at, okay, do we want to continue this, or do we want to try to work something different, bring it back in-house? TruBridge is, this is what they do. And no matter who is in our office, who's on vacation, who's down south for 3 or 4 weeks, the billing will go on. Now, there's certainly still responsibilities on our part. We still have to get the registration done correctly. We have to have all the demographic data, all the insurance data, the medical records have to be done correctly, and the bills have to be coded on our end so they can be billed. So there is still plenty of work for the staff you have in-house to do right now. There's not an expectation that you'll lose any employees. You won't lose any employees, because the three people you have are also doing all your reception and answering the phone, all your patient registration, and your billing. So what they do will look a little different. They will be liaison between TruBridge and the hospital, because there will always be things that get kicked back from insurance companies or Medicare, Medicaid to TruBridge, and they don't have the data to go in and research, and they may have to come back and they need a different account code, or the diagnosis code doesn't match the medical record, and there'll be lots of work to do, but it'll just be different kinds of work. Yes, sir.
Will TruBridge just, once the contract starts, will they just pick up from that day and move forward, or will they go back through some of the older accounts that maybe have sat dormant for a period of time and try to collect on those?
What they did at Petersburg, because they were changing software systems, they picked up from that day when they made the change and went forward. But because we're on CPSI already, they are anxious to look at all of the old stuff too. Obviously, they get paid 2.2% on everything they collect. So they're going to take a hard look at everything that's out there right now. And okay, we'll either collect it or let us know that it's part of what we need to write off as a bad debt or not timely filing, that kind of thing. But I found them to be very good at working with your government payers, your private insurance, your secondary insurances. The biggest problem they have is working with Search. Search does not like to communicate with them. They want to communicate with somebody at the hospital, and you have to work through that issue with Search. But on everything else, they're electronically into our system, so when they record payments or bills, they're automatically posted into our system. Give pretty detailed reports on a monthly basis, so this board or the hospital board will be able to see what the progress is they're making and the bank accounts have been.
One other question. Have they, to your knowledge, ever had any history of violation of the Fair Credit Collections Act or HIPAA or any problems?
No, because they're not a collection agency. What they do is they bill. The protocol is, I think they send three statements and then they make two phone calls to try to talk to a responsible party. And if they're not able to do that, then the accounts come back to you or to your hospital. And they never make decisions about sending anything to a collection agency or anything like that. They are billing and collection, and what they get to a point in the process that they're not able to collect comes back to the hospital, and the hospital makes those decisions.
Okay.
Anybody in the community can still walk into the hospital, be told what their account is, because it's all real-time data. They can make payments locally. They will get, someone may get a call from Mobile, Alabama, and they'll probably kind of talk like me a little bit. But they identify themselves as calling on behalf of Wrangell Medical Center. And again, they're not a collection agency, so they're not going to strong-arm anybody. They're going to let people know what, particularly on a private patient, what their options are, what the charity care policy is, what the prompt payment discounts may be, and try to make an arrangement to get the account paid.
Because I have a few questions. So what is it going to, how much money is going to go out on this collections in the next 2 years? What are we going to pay, you know, like if we were to hire somebody up there to do the same job in our community, is this, you're talking $100,000, $200,000, $400,000 the next couple of years? How much money are we talking to go out of this community that we could hire people and do the same job in our own house?
If we estimate about $9 million in collections, that's just under $200,000 a year that we would pay to TrueBridge. Certainly you can hire people for less money than that. The difficulty is the training and the coverage. Collecting or billing and collecting a Medicare bill is distinctly different than billing and collecting a Medicaid bill or a private insurance bill or a private pay bill. So those are unique training niches that you have to have. So potentially you could train one person to do Medicare, Medicaid billing and one person to do commercial private pay. But then you still have an issue of your Medicare, Medicaid biller decides to go on vacation for 6 weeks. Then your billing stops and you can't. So your option then would be to pay one of these $65 to $80 an hour contract billers to come into your community and do that billing. So it's about having the knowledge to be able to do this consistently and have somebody in the position doing it. And then that's your biggest issue. Yes, it's going to cost you more money. We're not going to mince words about that. But the potential in 2 years, if you can reduce your accounts receivable by half and put $2 million in the bank, then in 2 years you can make choices and decisions about can we now train someone to do this internally. You're still always going to have the issue about having someone in that position on a consistent basis because you don't have, if you start saying, well, let's have two people or three people, then you're beginning to approach what it would cost you to get TrueBridge to do it.
Okay, so if I understand this, then what I don't understand is if we're going to train somebody in 2 years, why are we not spending the money to train somebody now? I just don't, and since they're not a collection agency, what you're saying is all they're doing is going to do the billings, which basically the hospital does right now. What I do not understand is why is the hospital not collecting this money already? Can you explain that to me?
I can't speak to what has transpired over the last few years to bring you to the point you are now. But the reality of the point is that you got down to almost no cash. And you're currently about $500,000 in cash, which is about 15 to 20 days cash, which is, by most standards, a pretty precarious cash situation. It wouldn't take much. For instance, just this week, we got a letter from Medicaid saying we will not receive a cost of living increase on Medicaid payments this year. That's going to take another hit on the cash. So right now, in my mind, it's about making sure you don't lose money because accounts get so old and can no longer collect them, that you build up your cash and reduce your accounts receivable in the short term. And then, because it is only a two-year contract, in 12, 16, 18 months, you can start looking at, do we want to look, now that we've gotten the accounts receivable down, we've got a couple million dollars in the bank, we've got breathing room. Because if you do get into a situation where you're going to hire and train someone, you're going to have somebody who can do that. And so you would need at least some overlap with somebody like TrueBridge. One thing that TrueBridge will also do is they will send a staff person here for 4 weeks, and that's included in the 2.2%, no additional charge, to be on site for 4 weeks to help our staff make the transition. And that would be very helpful because they know all the systems and what has to go back and forth and in what fashions to make